Shalom, mi gente. Welcome to Matriarchal Transition and Ascension. And the way I'm doing this time is through slides, because I thought it would be a great way to both have a visual of sorts. I would also offer up that you might want to stay connected, because not everything I'm going to say is on the slide, but the essence is laid out. So thank you so much for being here, and I'm honored to be in space with you, and I'm so excited for you to be here. I'm a liberatory earth-based Jewish priestess, also known as a kohenet. The kohenet part is the priestess in Hebrew, and I'm committed to our living fully and living free. And so this teaching, and anything in the thread of this teaching, is dedicated to my mom, Vilma Aide Rosado Torres, and my main, my grandmother, Geraldine Aide Torres. Their memories will always be a blessing to me, even when they hold shadow. And I think sometimes for some of us, that's part of our stories. So one of the things that I want to step into before we kind of move into this is creating a container. And the container is an imagining of us being in a space, in a room, sitting in circle where it is beautiful, candle lit. There is a center altar available to us. There are snacks and beverages. There's also a table by the entrance of the door where you get to light a votive and put your intention for the time together, or something you may want to illuminate or leave behind once you're done. I mean, this can, all that intention can be put into the votive and added to a collection of votives throughout the night that will hold us. And so we're doing that. So the minute you come in, you're unfurling and you have access to the most comfortable way of being in this space for yourself. You light the candle and or ask a friend to do so. Sometimes we have no words and just the act itself is holding the space. And as we step in and we do that, we are all sitting comfortably and really present with what we're coming to this space and this teaching with. And as we're present, I invite you to call upon your spirit guides, your well ancestors, angels, plant support, your plant relatives, tree relatives, earth, star relatives. You can call in the whole posse. The nuance here is that you're calling them in to be in your space, your energetic space, and kind of like auric field. So that as we're sitting together and we're listening, nobody's ancestors are hopping on somebody else's energetic cord because they're trying to give information, but that we are all in energetic sense contained in our own particular lanes and expressions. And so are our spirit guides and our support systems. And so as an overarching kind of space, I will just call in the elements, because for me, there is so much medicine that they bring and offer, and there's so many ways that they do that. So I call in water and all its beautiful blessings and the container that it holds for transformation, but also for fullest feeling and expression and emotion. I call in, and also has a cleansing quality. I call in air. Similarly, has a way of filling up a space with freshness and helping us feel like there's something in movement. I call in fire to burn away that which is no longer needed, but also to warm us and keep us in a cozy womb of nourishment and support. And I call on the earth in all the ways that it alchemizes different elements, in all the ways that it takes something that is not beneficial and transforms it into takes the compost and transforms it in such a way that it nourishes the ground where it had its ending, right? where it turned into something different. And so I call in the earth in that way. I call on all the heavenly galaxy cosmo host that is also supporting our growth and our evolution in the ether realms, right? All those places there. We call that in to be our support. And that as we're moving and transitioning, may the healing and the support and the ahas this evening, or it's evening here, but whenever you're listening to this, whatever the time of day, may move forward after you, all the work and all the engagement in ways that are generative and sustainable, may move in those that came before you, those that are beside you. It's kind of this thing that when we're doing this work for ourselves, it impacts not only our lives, but the collective thread in your lineage and the collective thread in my lineage. So, and the medicine that we're here to bring. So I trust that they're holding the space for us, with us, and through us as we step into this conversation. One of the things that is going to become important in order for more context is a bit of my story. My story has a lot to do with a lot of pain, my friends. My childhood, it was really rough. And my relationship with my mother and my grandmother, though has many beautiful aspects to it, was also not as much with my grandmother, but with my mother, really challenging and really painful. And there are spaces in which we were able to do some work around that and around forgiveness and around supporting each other past that place. And there were ways that we couldn't. There were ways that boundaries still needed to be set, and things still needed to happen. So kind of some of my background on this matriarchal transition and ascension. If you don't know me, or you're just coming to know me, my grandmother passed away. My maternal grandmother passed away a couple of weeks back. Unexpected, had a heart attack, and she was 85 years old. And so my mother passed away last year of pancreatic cancer, and my mother just had turned 60 last year. And so one of the things that were really the impetus to this teaching is not only what happened up to those moments, but also what has happened after. And it's not, there's no end to this, right? It continues to show up in waves, teachings, and things moving through me and through my siblings that are a beautiful expression of what it means to kind of that shifting of those, what I call tectonic plates, and shifting the space of our personal context, right? So it is something to not have my mother and my grandmother in physical form. And there's also a lot of pain, a lot of trauma, a lot of regret, just a myriad of things that I had to continue to work through that were challenging and will continue to bring spaciousness around it and witness around it. And so my relationship to this is not only literally like having these experiences literally now in this season of my life. I'm 44 at this point, and not having my mother and my grandmother at this age really seemed, it's painful in the way that I had hoped to see both of them reach their ripe old age. And I mean ripe like 100, right? Like, I was aiming for that because it would have been beautiful to continue to see the generations and that we get to keep track of that. But it didn't happen. And way before this moment, years back, I created a course called Becoming Your Own Ancestor. And I had created that course, and that was when I was the Passionate Wise Woman as like my brand. I had created that course in response to all the ways I had struggled to connect to my lineage, connect to my indigeneity, connect to my Jewishness, like connect to all these aspects of myself that I knew were running and present through me. But I didn't have a model before me. I didn't have the context. Neither really did my mother, though my mother had an interest in it because it's why she moved to Puerto Rico, so that we could have connection with the land and the community that we come from and the island that we come from. And so having said that, one of the things that I did was I created the course and ran it. I think I ran it one time, one season. And as I ran that particular course, it was really nourishing to create space for others to also engage in that process of like becoming, building your internal capacity to respond to an environment in which you didn't get to choose, right? You didn't get to choose whether you were handed down information about your lineage or not, but it's what happened through colonization. It's what happened through assimilation. It's what happened through violence, right? Like, and it's what happened like generationally moving forward, where people didn't keep to the traditions because we kept on saying, and we still find it, right? It's outdated. Fair enough. That's a good argument. And it's really important to know where we're coming from in context with the idea that there are ways that I am and things that I do that I know are directly connected to ancestry, that are directly connected to pathways of my peoples. And to really look at those things and be like, holy Batmobile. Here I'm thinking I'm starting from an empty plate, if you will. I'm not. And it was a matter of my perspective and seeing things. And so I started to notice different type of things. I started to notice like certain gifts and skill sets that I had or developed further. I started noticing wisdom that would just like be moving through me. I also started noticing how my mother and I and some of my siblings, for the most part, right, like have this way of being in the world or seeing in the world. And some of those pieces were harder than others because some of them I had to then, which is part of the teaching, and we'll talk about that a little bit later more in depth, but begin to identify what were like coping mechanisms or like mechanisms and coping distortions, right? And how we tend to like own some of that. And so we'll talk about that. But I started like doing consciously and unconsciously all of this work, right? So much so that even like, you know, Ariane and Manny became somewhat aware, my children somewhat aware of like my thing around this, right? My desire for deeper connection. And a lot of the byproduct of that was like my return into Judaism in my generation allowed me to have connection to practices and traditions that have otherwise would have remained kind of lost in my family, because nobody in these modern, I'm going to go back to my grandmother and my mother. My great grandmother practiced Christianity. She didn't, and she did like a Spanish Pentecostal thing, which is more charismatic. And, you know, and so raised her children in that way as well. And so because of that, there wasn't access to any other thing. And already by virtue of Christianity's kind of track record, anything that existed before it becomes erased, right? In that kind of like you're a new person type of idea. So, which I grew up with primarily in my young years, going to church and things like that. And so there is always this very like spiritual quality to the women in my family in a really powerful way. And it's energetic, like thread was always more dirty, lay down, was always more matriarchal than patriarchal, but patriarchy existed in my family in terms of like my great grandfather was very much, they had him and my great grandmother had 16 children. Two of them, the second set of twins passed. And so then they had, you know, 14 children left. It's a large family. And definitely had a good amount of boys and girls. I can't even think right now what's the ratio. But And so he was right, the patriarch in the family. And it kind of went down from there, but still the women in the family had more presence in that way. And so growing up with my mother was very much my mother was very much about family, trying to weave her own tapestry, because my grandmother moved to New York, to Brooklyn, when my mom and my uncle were children. And that changed everything, and also changed the family dynamics. And family dynamics are a place of wounding in my lineage in a big way. And also relationships between mothers and daughters, and things like that. And so for me, contextually, there was this, like, my mother was always seeking connection to family because of her own fractured childhood and her own fractured relationship with her mother. And so she always placed a priority on that, but just in interesting ways, because my mother was both, like, as a woman of color in her context, was also ambitious and wanted to, study as much as she wanted to make a great lasagna, as much as she would, like, sew the pillows for the sofa. She wanted to get her degrees, and that was something that my mother was chasing most of her life. Because after me and my sister, then she had six younger children, and that was a really painful season, not so much because of the children, because I just, for me, I can't imagine being in a space to say that. But because she didn't have the resources, the support systems, for this family that she wanted to create, like a self-contained family, because they were her children and she wouldn't have to go far, right? Or be rejected. And that I want to take a moment to breathe into that. A lot of my mother's emotional pain and challenges were not only due to mental health, but to really traumatic situations in her own life that I only came to really understand later on, the year and a half I spent with her before she passed away. And one of the practices that we did was really helping unearth some of her stories. My hope was to offer her the space, sacred space, to be witnessed, and also to delineate between what was her and issues that she may have had, and what were actual societal constructs around sexism, ableism, you name it, right? And racism. I'm so glad that we had that time, because I think that for her to unload and realize what parts weren't about, like, her makeup or her chemistry, but were about the world that she lived in, that despite how hard she tried, things wouldn't move in the direction that she hoped. When I was younger, I had a lot of resentment toward that, which informed how I started my life. I got pregnant at 16. I wanted a home, and I committed, vowed to be home with my children. And I didn't see any space to try to do more than that, to try to pursue some sort of ambition, because it was going to cost me the energy that I would have been using for my family. And so, a distortion out of a distortion, right? And so that's part of the story. My story is extremely long and just really complicated, and painful. But also, some of this work leads you to the places where you see a lot of the beauty. And it also helps you recontextualize your family, and if you have access to some sort of relationship with family, or your mother and your grandmother, and so on and so forth. So I'm coming from that place. I'm coming from much more recently, my grandmother passing on and transitioning. And passing on tends to be, classical language around it, or traditional language rather. But truly, they're transitioning from one dimension to the next. They're just not accessible in this one. And that matters. It's not diminishing of it, right? Like, I want to give my mother a hug. I wish I could give my mother a kiss. I wish I could make my mother a cup of coffee and make her food, right? So that doesn't diminish. And you also recognize as well that while I can do those things and still feed it to the altar, that she's in another dimension and accessible and possibly more available to help us out. So I'm grateful for it. And at the same time, it's challenging. So that's some of my story of what is happening here. Next, what we're going to look at is complicated transitions. And the reason I titled it complicated transitions, it is because, so part of my undergrad, I've been studying grief and mourning. And one of the pieces that I was studying about was the impact of grief on the body. And, you know, at a very like cellular level, physical level and mental, all the things. And one of the terms that were used, and I can link the article. If you're interested in that, just send me an email and I'll send you the article. But it talks about complicated grief and non-complicated grief. And complicated grief has so much more to do with the stories, the narratives, the trauma around it, if there is any. And one of the things that becomes a good container for this is understanding transitions to be non-complicated, which would be equal, like, you know, you have a great relationship with your mama, you have a great relationship with your grandmama, and, you know, you have the doilies. This is a joke and not a joke. If y'all know, sometimes our elders be storing stuff, right? You inherited the doilies of your great grandmother that your grandmother and your mother were holding. All of that would be non-complicated, right? Not devoid of challenge, but non-complicated in the way that it doesn't have a lot of harmful or traumatic story attached to it. Now, on the other side of that is the complicated transitions. And so when things are not as one would hope or desire, and at some point you stop hoping and desiring and you just are like, you're like, it is what it is. You're not satisfied with it, but you just, there's no choice in that, it seems. And so you just settle for that, right? So complicated transitioning really is about the places where these stories are showing up and what's happening for us. So there's a lot of ways to hold this. And again, like I mentioned, you know, an example would be when a parent is living, but you have no relationship, or you do have a relationship, but it's not aligned, or your parent and grandparent are no longer in this dimension. And that happened earlier than one would hope. And so that creates complicated, right? It gets complicated. It is complex in our narratives. And so one of the pieces that I think become important in this is being able to kind of analyze, and it's almost like taking on a study of sorts, but it's of yourself. And what I'm calling here your she story is your matriarchal narrative in your family with your mother and your grandmother. What is the story? So, for example, my mother and my mother always went to my grandmother's house in Brooklyn. It was like the safe house. It's where my mother always fell back on, which was good in some ways and awful in others, because the relationship between my mother and her mother was really challenging, to say the least. And so there's a lot of story that comes from that. There's also a story about my mother from other people who were so gracious, and I mean that so sarcastically, that as a child, they decided they wanted to share these stories with me and became part of what I thought or how I thought about things. And so what we're looking here is for what is and what was missing from your relationships in this particular matriarchal narrative, right? And this idea of one generation to the next. The question also is, how have you created space to mourn that? And how has that looked? So often enough, we're just coping the best we can. And our best mechanism is to be like, well, it is what it is. Boom. I don't think about it. And the way that that becomes super challenging is that all that energy in a very, very literal way is stored up in your cells and in your body. and your body's holding that, right? Your body's holding the grief. It's holding the pain, but we shoved it so far down, it's not even remotely near the surface. And for me, there's the part in that where it's like, okay, we probably should examine how we are, excuse my clicking, examining how we're actually dealing with that, because it's going to become important as we continue to process. It's no longer like just this simple thing where we're like, oh, this is what it was, and that's it. No. And if you haven't been as cognizant of your mourning, there is the question, how has that been looking? And so underneath grief is sadness and, you know, pain and also joy in whatever measures. And so the truth is that underneath that, there's all this emotion, and there may be ways in your life that you're actually trying to process that through. And maybe it's in some relationship. So maybe you're in a relationship with someone who you care about, and in some ways you're unconsciously projecting some of those relational pieces that are missing in your life or have been missing in that kind of original, you know, composition of development as a human being and in relationship to parents and community and family. And so you start tossing that onto other relationships, seeking that to be filled or that to be the aspect of you to be nourished. So you're mourning and longing, and there's grief, and there's ways that you may be punishing yourself or not, or projecting it into other relationships that's not necessarily generative for you. And so in that way, your mourning and your grief take shape and form, but it just looks differently. It looks like you going through waves of anger, rage, and frustration and not knowing exactly what's so irritating, or watching, let's hypothetically say we're watching a movie where the narrative is about the matriarchy and things like that and the distinctive relationships, and you shut the movie off because it just makes you nauseous looking at the happy people, right? And so you're like, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want it to come up. And what's interesting is that I remember when my mother got her diagnosis, I got home from my training, my Kohenet training. It was the week before the last week of the training in which I would be ordained. And no, that's not true. That may not be true. Okay, I'm not sure. But anyway, I got home from the retreat, and in that particular retreat, we were looking at the archetype of the mother, the Ima, in terms of our like lineage. And I remember distinctly saying, I did all the exercises, and I remember saying out loud in circle, I don't have the capacity to do this work around my mother right now, because my life was, I was coming out of divorce, just so many things. I had already gotten out of the, like, I had already been divorced, but all these other issues were coming up in my life. And so I had already been divorced for probably like 2 years, maybe. And I was still not fully, like, you know, on my feet, or maybe less. Okay, I'm going to stop this time thing. It never works for me. Anyway, and when I got home from that retreat, my mother called me to tell me that she had gotten an x-ray and that she has pancreatic cancer, or they think she has cancer. It was an awful process, that beginning. The doctor who was taking care of her was such an asshole. Anyway, and so then it was a roller coaster ride up until last year. And part of this, like, being willing to deal with the energy, being willing to deal. It's interesting because I see now there was no choice. Like, the universe spirit was like, baby girl, we gonna talk about this, because you about to step into a huge shift. And lo and behold, it was. And so it's important to, rather than if your coping mechanism is to ignore something until you have the capacity, you have to look at how much actually holding is impacting your capacity to live, to just be. And there's so many things that are still being processed in my life because I didn't have the space when I was younger to do that. I was busy mothering. I was busy in a really toxic relationship. My life was really different then. There was like a conscious choice, and I tried my best to, like, I knew that if I didn't deal with it, it was just going to continue to wreak havoc on my kids and so on and so forth. So I tried in very small spurts. And I'm grateful for that because I think that that kept me alive and it kept me as present as I could possibly be for that time to get to where I'm at today, right? So taking the time to look at your she story and this matriarchal narrative will continue to contextualize and give an understanding of what is present when we're talking about this. What is present? What comes up for you? What do you know and what you don't know? And that's where the inquiry is really about taking the time to dive in just a little bit deeper and say, you know what? This is the story I have. It's not pretty or glamorous, but here are some shining moments, right? And that is what's going to become important in this particular piece when we're thinking about, okay, how do we actually name how complicated things have been, how challenging things have been, right? And honor that and not do that whole I need to suck it up type of thing, right? So I've built into this teaching moments of pause. So right now, we're just going to step in because what I just said a lot and I just talked about pieces that are important. And so we're going to pause and we're going to breathe. So we're going to inhale for 4, 3, 4. We're going to pause and exhale for 4, 1, 3, 2, 3, 4. And if you need to do that again, please feel free to do so. And what I want you to observe during this time is, are you holding your breath? How is your body right now? How is your heart? Just take a moment to journal, to check in, to grab your favorite crystal. Like, what do you need in order to be able to move through this? And know that you may, and please do pause it and maybe save another piece for another time. Whatever the case may be, if you need to step away so that you can come back to it when you have these pockets of capacity. Or maybe you listened to through it and then come back and sit with the pieces. But I just want you to make sure you're caring for yourself. I also want you to make sure you're taking the time to stretch, however that's accessible in your body. And also give some focus on your hip and pelvis area, this place of rootedness. Is the place that's most impacted energetically and physically, literally, by this work, by matriarchal work and kind of this story of origin stuff. And so if you can't move your hips in any particular way, I also offer up to take a moment to send just like warm energy to that area. Imagine it being enveloped in some sort of blanket of warmth and like you feel held and supported by it. And so I invite you to do that as well if you don't have access to moving your body in that way. So the next part that we're going to is the unbinding. This is really important work, right? So here we've gotten down the she story. Or maybe we drew it, collaged it, recorded it, or wrote it out, right, as a journal experience. It becomes extremely important to begin to unbind the way your stories are wrapped and have warped together. Like your story with your mother's story, with your grandmother's story, and kind of whatever that those narratives are and the threads of that. Sometimes it's interesting because I think of, you know, vines that grow around buildings and structures and things like that and have this way of wrapping itself around everything. But you don't see that until you go behind, right? And so I want us to pay attention to where is it warped? Where is the story warped? Where is how you know yourself in that story warped, right? So we're going to come to some questions in a minute. But this is an aspect I've been working on with a bit of difficulty because it demands that we ask ourselves questions we really don't think about. Sometimes if you haven't been present or have had access to the she story, you might have to do a bit of archaeological work, right? And you might need to assemble the she story so then you can begin to look for the bindings and the patterns. And this is what we're looking for. We're looking for bindings and patterns, warped, wrapped, you know, ways of being. Now, the piece about this that I think is really important is that sometimes that you know the story. Sometimes you have to dig a little for a context and kind of put a story together in that way. So know that even if you don't have direct access, I want you to look at what matriarchal energy has been in your life and observe the story and the patterns of that, because that still has affected you. Even if you are not like blood related, or even if there's like just like a lot of distance between your relationship with this person, there's still an impact of what it looks like or doesn't look like. And so even if there doesn't, oh, there's nothing for me to write. Actually, there is the fact that you don't have our particular thought around that is an opportunity to start thinking about what wasn't said and what wasn't modeled and what wasn't present, because that's the story, that it wasn't present. And these are the ways it wasn't present, and you knew that. So taking the time to kind of start noticing the patterns in the story, start noticing, for example, you know, in a conversation with my mother, we were talking about relationships with men. And one of the things that we discovered as I asked more questions about my mother, my grandmother, my grandmother's sisters, there's this pattern that started, I don't know if I said grandmother already, but there's this pattern that started to evolve and show up, like it was showing itself. And I remember when I looked at my mother and I said, I was right by my stove, I turned around and I said, oh my God, Mom, none of the women in this family, in your mother's line, at least these present generations, know what it is to be loved well with respect and often settle into relationships with the men that they're with because they fell in love with someone else that was unrequited love. And so it, like, the story is your novella at best, your soap opera at best. And I felt so much compassion for that. And also realize and saw the patterns even running into my life, right? And so not that I had a clear like, oh, well, this is what we need to do. Nope. But it's just observing what was going on with, wait, why are they getting into relationships in which they are not loved? And why are they falling in love with people who are not available? How was it that they saw themselves that this particular pattern repeated itself over and over and over? So that's an example of that, right? And the archaeological work I had to do for that was having a conversation with my mother about it and then just asking some questions, because I had realized that I didn't want to assume anymore. I didn't want to have to put together the pieces. I wanted to hear things from her own voice. And of course, my mother was always willing to talk about these things. And she held it in like high regard in terms of if somebody had spoken confidential things to her. So my mom was like one of those people who would have taken something to the grave, and she did. She took a lot of shit to the grave. But anyway, so that's the importance of assembling this she story, this matriarchal story, is in order to begin to look at the patterns. And so if you can't go past, let's say, your mother, because there's nothing in the past to kind of pull from, then you look at your mother's story. And there's a bit of objectivity necessary for it, like a spaciousness. And the way I did that was to begin to humanize my mother versus just seeing my mother for either the person who used to beat the crap out of me and or the person who like harmed me so much. So, you know, it's like either rage or ambivalence, because I think I experienced a lot of ambivalence. But this is the way we're going to find those bindings and patterns and begin to delineate for ourselves. Where am I? Where was she? Who is she? Who am I? So here's the inquiry. Here are the questions. Who were they? Who was your mother? Who was your grandmother? Like, what's the story? Who were you? You know, there was a time where I would have defined myself by the ways that I was different. But also realizing that some of the healing, prospects of this is that in healing it, you get to define yourself by being fully yourself and not who you are in reaction to others or in the light of other people's projections. And so this is kind of part of that narrative, looking at, wait a minute, who am I and who were they? And taking the time to name that. Underneath that, we're looking at, what do you actually know about them? And what don't you know? Because there's so many things that we guess we know about people, or we think we know about people. And then there's things we actually don't know about people because we just never had that conversation or we've never seen it. I mean, there's many layers, but I want you to begin to observe, what do you actually know? What is actually factual about them? What do you think about what you know? I know I'm asking you to think about what you think about, and it feels like an exhaustive stretch, but it's not. It's really thinking, oh, I think this about that. Like, I thought I knew that, but now as an adult, when I look at it, I cannot begin to tell you how many moments I have for myself where I have cried because I realized that I was judging my mother from a place of absolute fucking arrogance, and that I could never imagine what it would be like to be in her shoes for a couple of reasons. One, her generational context. Two, her skin tone was darker than mine. And her life experience, her mother was different than she was, right? And her father was different than what I grew up with, which changes everything. And here I thought, really, like, even when I'm talking about the aspects in which she caused me harm, violence, and pain, like thinking that I knew, right? I just thought she was the fucking devil. It took me a long time to get there, though, because before that, I was loyal to my mother no matter what. My mother was all I had in that way. So what do you think about what you know? How much of what you think you know is wrapped in assumption or perspective? Like, what informs the way you see the world, right? The important thing here is really to examine your beliefs, thoughts, and perspectives. We can only meet ourselves as honestly as we are willing to be. So if I couldn't get down to what I thought about my mother and why I thought the way I thought, I would have never been able to access compassion for her or for me, for the mother I was and for the mother I wasn't, right? Like, all the things, or the mother I've been and the mother I haven't been, because thank the gods, my children are here still in this dimension, and so am I. And this is why this teaching is worth creating and toiling with, because it took me a minute to get this finally done. Again, because I did it the night of the Zoom and yet had to come back and redo it, which is okay because it needed to be. So I want us to get this down. I want us to really begin to observe with honesty whether whether your ideas, thoughts, or beliefs reach the conclusion of a negative judgment, then so be it. That's what you think, and that's where you're at. And so it's important to name that, because we're, again, looking at the patterns and the stories. And in order to unwind them, we have to be willing to surrender sometimes our perspectives and what we've formed such strong beliefs around, because it impacted us negatively, and was harmful, And because of that, we immediately like, we don't want to repeat that or do that. So this is what we think about it. And often there's just not enough information to have a better understanding rather than directly taking it on as there's something wrong with you, right? Or you were fill in the blank. And that's the reason why. No, the reason why could possibly be because of that person's context and their belief system and the way they were warped or distorted because that was what was handed down and they didn't know what else to do with it. And that doesn't excuse anybody. That dwells with and. And that also means that sometimes how those chips fall are really strong boundaries. And sometimes, it may mean no connection at all. Whatever the case, it's important to be able to tell the thing as it is and to know yourself in that conversation and what you're believing. So again, in this space, it's really, I want you to take the time to look at these questions. Maybe you come up with other questions. Maybe there's something juicy that you follow, like you feel like there's something about what you're writing about or what you're saying. Maybe you need to call a family member, someone else, and kind of get oriented a little bit because you don't have enough information. And that's okay. And that's okay. What we really want to observe is how we think about what we think about, and where is it coming from, and how much of it is assumption based on only outside information. And it's interesting now because as my kids are grown, I try to think of the many moments in their childhood, which they don't know about, of course, that I did something or put something aside or didn't tell the whole story because of the harm it could cause. Either which way, I don't know. Some of those decisions I did make, and they wouldn't know because I didn't want them to be impacted by that in that way. Didn't see it as anything beneficial at all. And so they're only getting part of a story, right? And while I didn't do that a lot, because the way I parent is, I try to be as honest with my kids always. Because I strongly believe, and it's kind of my personal ethic, that they will be adults far longer than children. So that the relationship that one wants to build with them needs to be one of mutual respect and so on and so forth, right? And that even as adults, we can honor each other's space and things like that. And so it is. So I'm grateful for that. So anyway, let's take another moment of breathing and pausing. Do you need to go get something to drink, a snack? Do you need to go pet your dog or your cat? Do you need to take a break? These are the good questions we're asking right now. Are you holding your breath? How is your body? How is your heart? Take a moment to journal and check in with yourself. Breathe if you need to. Be sure to stretch. And again, if you can stretch aspects of your body, then do so. And if that's not accessible, then send that warm, beautiful, glowing, honey gold light to your body and to your hip and pelvic area. So important. And so next we move on the distinction between gifts, skills, and coping mechanisms and distortions. So this is the thing right here, as we're unraveling and looking at the pieces and unbinding the stories. And there's a lot of magic available when we're able to begin to distinguish between something that's an actual gift and skill. And that which is birthed out of a coping mechanism and a distortion. And what I mean by that is that gifts in this context are ways a person is like has as a natural inclination. There's some people that, I mean, I remember I have I and I still do, I have friends that cook out of like They taste everything. They don't need a recipe. They love plain. It's just natural that they come up with this, all these like inventions of meals and stuff like that. I always love that. It takes me a little bit more time to play and a little bit more information. But that would be like a natural gift, right? To make people feel comfortable in a space, natural gift. A skill is something that you develop and practice over time. So if you learned how to sew, or if you learned how to, I don't know, organize, I don't know, right? Whatever that particular thing is, and you get good at it, that's wonderful. Now, a coping mechanism and a distortion would be the women in my family have always fill in the blanks. So let's use this as an example. Let's use food. You know, the women in my family are great cooks, literally. They really are great cooks. And those that, you know, hold that identity as well. But at the same time, there is this... My mother took years to get my mom to finally, like, receive it. My mother would be in the kitchen all day, all night. She'd be making the food, she'd be cleaning, she'd be doing all the things, whittled down to the last nub. Like, she exhausted herself. And of course, it was always quicker if she did it, which really, this is my mother's, it was my mother's thing, right? It's quicker if she did it. So she didn't ask for help because she didn't want to rely on anybody or wait for anybody. So she would do that and would only be able to come out after everything was cleaned up. Because, of course, we all know that if you leave it, then you have to go face it later on and you were going to be even more exhausted. And so that also meant that my mother never got to enjoy her company, really, and never got to do those things and to just be present, right, or rest. There's a way that I could say, oh, I'm going to pick up that same type of thing. And it's interesting because intentionally I would, and I still do, I will cook the food, I will sit down and eat the food, and I'll go do the dishes later, which is a nightmare in my apartment because it's just me and there's always a pile of dishes. Anyways, because they keep on piling up, and that's why you want to wash them when you do things. But me, I have this thing about it because I remember my mother, I couldn't even finish eating and she was trying to wash my plate. So I always thought eating time is eating time. It's when you get to share. It's when you get to connect. It's when you get to rest. And you shouldn't have to be like rushing around all the time to make sure that everything spits back. That's less important than rest. So as I got older, my mother would come to my house. And so I would have to remind her. She would try to be helpful, try to do this, that. And I was a lady, if you don't sit your ass down, I'm gonna feel a type of way. Please sit down. Let me make you a cup of coffee. Let me give you food. Don't worry about it. It'll be taken care of. Because I wanted her to have that experience that she could serve and she can do all the beautiful things and make us yummy food. And she also was worthy of rest. And that those things are menial. They can wait. They're not as important as the moment. And so after a while, she got it. And she would always say, you taught me that. You taught me to stop trying to do things when I'm in other people's houses, that I can sit and just be a guest. Right. Because that particular distortion came from feeling uncomfortable everywhere she went and like a burden, that she would try to make it light by being almost invisible, leaving no mark, and also helping anybody else with their marks, right? If we cannot become aware of these patterns and distortions of a person because of trauma, because of pain, because of what was missing in their lives, we cannot see them as clearly, and equally, we cannot see ourselves. And we're not looking at the ways our need for connection causes us to continue these particular patterns and these particular ways because they offer us a degree of connection. And so what it causes is we need to look at ourselves and say, okay, I am longing for connection and for a sense of belonging, but I don't want to take on this particular way in my family because that's been toxic and harmful and violent. But this thing over here that we do is really beautiful, like the essence of it. So, like, you know, everybody tries to get together for a holiday. Sounds great in theory, up until somebody starts arguing or things go down the hill, right? So I can keep the essence and the intent, but the way the container is held might be different. So maybe we don't get together at the house, but we get together to eat at a restaurant, right? Where we can think differently about how that environment looks rather than continue the same toxic cycles. We don't want that anymore, but we can't shift that and look at those unless we look at it and say, oh, I see what's happening here. Here, I've taken on this particular quality and texture of my family emotionally because it's how I feel connected to them. But now that has come to an end. And I cannot even begin to tell you how many times that's been happening for me in this cycle that we are in right now with the great conjunction, the solar eclipses, and all of those things, new moons, full moons, all the goodness, getting to these places where I'm like, oh, wait, so I still have relationships with family in different ways. And there's ways that I'm like, wait, why? I don't know about you, but sometimes in my family, like, we're connected, but we're not connected because we don't spend enough time to really know each other. But we are still offering a loyalty and a connection that actually is not there, right? And so to want more for yourself is to be able to acknowledge, I'm like, oh, wait, shit, it's not there. It's not there coming or going. So where does that energy need to be dissolved at? Where does that relationship need to change? Because it doesn't have that for me. And it doesn't have that for them either. So that's what we're looking at. We're looking at the ways in which we continue to perpetuate, like, we're like, because it's what we know, because we haven't taken the time to examine it. The inquiry, the questions in this piece are as follows. What are the gifts and the skills of your she story? This is possibly by far one of the most beautiful things I've experienced in doing this work. It's when I look at my mother and I look at my grandmother and I go, and my grandmother, my great-grandmother, and my great-great-grandmother, who happened to be the town midwife and healer. And I would have known that had I not asked. So before I even knew that, I saw myself living into that wise woman, that healer archetype, and being like, I've done birth work, doula work, and having this connection to that in such a way that I didn't understand where it was coming from. I mean, don't get me wrong. My mother got her nursing degree, her RN, in her 50s. So healing is a thing in my family. So when I was able to like start looking at the magic in the she story, at the gifts, at the capacity to develop skills, I was like, what? I come from some bad bitches, right? Like, I was like, what? What? My mother, 8 children, went back to school again in her 50s, got her nursing degree, is like her third career with her 8 kids. Get out of here. Come on. Still trying to drive around seeing people even when she was sick. And I was like, lady, it's time to rest. It's time to rest. But what are the gifts and the skills in your she story in this matriarchal narrative? What are your gifts and skills? And then what are the mechanisms and the distortions in your she story? Right? So we're looking at both aspects. What are your mechanisms and distortions? Some of them are your own and some of them have been handed to you like a recipe for bread. Right? Like, you follow this and this is exactly what's going to happen. And then we want to look at, what does it give you to continue to operate out of the mechanisms and distortions, which is exactly what I was saying before, where our longing to be connected to family, our longing to have that matriarchal lineage, or however really you encase that, right, for yourself and define that for yourself. And our longing turns into this really strange thing where we continue to embody ways of being that are not generative or supportive, or an expression of love and devotion to yourself and to your story. And so this is an opportunity to kind of jot that down and look at it. And again, right? These are really intense moments that we're dropping into the space. And I trust that all that we've called in is supporting and helping us. And then also having these built-in moments where we get to go, oh, actually, let me pause and breathe. So here's our pause and breathe moment. A little stretching. A little asking myself, where is my body right now? I'm in my moon time. So my first day, I'm feeling the achiness. I'm feeling the space that I'm holding in my body. But I'm also kind of just like relaxed into this moment and this space with such devotion and love for the work that we're doing here. So we'll move on. Ascension, pain and power. This excites me. So can we talk about the word power just for 1 minute? And you'll see this in the slide because it was so important to me. So I want to name that power has become a word representing such an abstract concept, right? I want to offer a context for it for the time that we're together. Before it became distorted and used to control, manipulate, and commit violence, I want to bring back power, what it's containing and meaning, back to its essence, which is, you know, it's an erotic energy. It's the essence of the human spirit. It's an erotic shape, right? So bringing power back to its erotic shape, no longer using power, but using erotic signature as a way to hold the fire, the essence. In some traditions, it is named like chi, life force, chai, shakti, and so much more. There's so many layers to the way that this is named. It is a unique to me. Right? It is the unique essence in each of us with its own specific signature and texture. If we can continue to build that, each of our families and our lineages also have a unique erotic signature. So we're building, right? Like as we're holding this time and talking about these ideas, and as if we can continue to build that into the understanding that our families and our lineages also have that, also have a unique erotic signature. The blessed DNA is yielding so much more than one could have imagined, right? So we know that when we're talking about epigenetics, when we're talking about trauma and things like that. And so if that is true as well, then it beckons us to be able to realize that the goodness can also be, right, moved through. And in the spirit and container is what I'm drawing back to the erotic signature, right? It's like, I'm bringing it back to its essence, unshaped by needing to use power as its like predecessor, and back to the erotic energy that actually is existing. So when I say ascension, pain, and power, power to me is erotic signature. But I knew that if I wrote that there, you would be like, what the fuck is she talking about? So hashtag erotic signature. You know how shit gets trendy today. But to me, in order for us to understand what we're connecting to or what we're calling or speaking to, this is not just some random shit, right? It's actually things that are moving through us. And now we also want to name the space of Two-Spirit. We also want to name the space of the ways that this is all shifting and evolving. And we also want to name the nuance that it's, you know, and I watch this when we're talking in community, like masculine and feminine energy, and we're trying to be like non-binary, but we don't want to even name, like, there's masculine, there's feminine, there's all of it. The masculine and feminine are not the bookmarks. There's so many different expressions in the world. And so what we want to get to, though, is the essence of the energetic, right? Like the energetic texture and the energetic code by which you live and move through, which is connected. You have an erotic signature. And the way your family has that erotic signature and your lineage is the medicine that your people bring to the collective. And so I love the way Divergent touches this, you know, and some other, Harry Potter touches this. Other movies have touched like this place of like, oh, if, you know, here's the, you know, the Earth Clang, right? Here's the Air Clan, you know, like, and here's the Fire Tribe and all of those good things. And I love that because I think it gives us an imagery that helps us understand that we do have a contribution, our families do have a contribution to the collective healing and wholeness, to the collective work that needs to be done. And when I say healing, I'm not meaning that one is cured or those things. I really struggle with this language now a lot, in ways that sometimes are challenging because we don't get cured. You know, some of us have scar tissue. Hello, right? So I'm really looking at shifting that language. But anyway, it's back to erotic signature. There's a squirrel. It's important to understand that this is what we're reclaiming. This is what we're discovering. So when we're ascending and we're stepping into a distinctive erotic signature and quality that is unique to us, cannot be replicated. Our siblings have their own, our peoples have their own, like it cannot be replicated in that way. Everybody has their own. So when I'm talking about this in terms of this relationship, I'm talking about you connecting to that erotic signature. That's the medicine that you bring to your context and generation. So the pain in ascension hits differently. It is the one where you are holding all of it. So you're holding what was, what is, what was missing, where you are at, where you are at and not. You will be awed with the capacity and will be offered a choice and what you will take with you, right? That's the choice. What will you take with you? I'm sorry, because I'm reading that. What will you take with you? And what once and for all will be left behind? And those are valid, like this is that choice point, that place, which is why awareness is necessary of these pieces. So the reason pain hits a little differently is because once you've experienced some of these transitions, you've come face to face with mortality. You've come face to face with this particular like dimensional timeline where there is like a beginning and an end. And because we've come face to face with that, things have an eternal type of texture, right? The gift that this brings is that you're able to hold like all the, you know, the painful things, the challenging, the not so challenging, the beautiful, the sacred, you hold it all together and you find less and less the need to like try to diminish one so that another one can exist. But you learn how all the colors of the rainbow exist, all the stories exist in that, and that you are at where you are at, right? And so it's really beautiful when you start to, I believe in our capacity inherently to hold for so much complexity, but I believe also that our conditioning has done us a disservice, along with religious belief systems that often create, you know, very strict binaries so that it doesn't allow us to hold for all the complexity. And so this is where this particular shift, when the ascension happens, when those moments happen, that there's these different opportunities for us. You will also keenly feel the longing for an initiatory ritual, a tangible ceremony that honors that a shift has taken place, one in which we are circled with matriarchs that came before us and the ones that have taken us in, surrounded by silver-haired, erotic charge that lives unapologetically. Like, this is where it becomes much more apparent how painful it can be when you haven't had those particular initiatory processes. Something has happened in your life. Something has shifted. And part of our cognition and our incredible human system is that we are, right, we can live in so many dimensions. So we need something physical and tangible, just like we need an idea, just like we need a feeling. All of those things together, a sensory body, right, both physically and energetically, is the way we're created, if you will, or built to function, which is why we have all these amazing, awesome gifts, and so do our beloved like animals and our plant relatives, etc. But while we don't have the silver-haired folks with all that erotic charge, and you know who I'm talking about, because some of them elders, they be unapologetic as fuck, and like doing things that you wouldn't have imagined. And they don't care because they're past the place of evaluating somebody else's thought on it. But this place of pain is where we get to look at this part of the story. Now, I have had many imaginings about what it could have looked like for me. What I did discover that took me a while. I think that there's space for grieving what has not been or has been denied access to. What that looks like is different for everyone and comes in waves. But I got to the point where I became aware that I wanted to change that story for myself, and change it as a final verdict. Like, it's no longer a final verdict. It's part of the story that lives in a multiplicitous of dimensions and strains and yarns, if you will, and threads. And that's one, and that there's many other as well. Like, that's not the only story. And it's okay that I've needed to grieve not having clear initiation. What I discovered when that happened, when I was like grieving and feeling angry, but also wanting to move past that place because what was at stake was larger and much more important to me, which was my kids and what they understood as lineage or connection, which is so fraught with challenges. But honoring what was missing, I set out in my story to find where initiation and changes took place, but I didn't see them as such. So that's what I was like, okay, here's my story. Here it is in all its glory and non-glorious bullshit. What happened when this happened? What happened when that happened? And I started looking at the pieces and I was like, wait, that smells like initiation. As a bruja of my experience and time on this earth, I'm like, I could smell initiation from a mile away. And that was really powerful for me, really beautiful to begin to reclaim and rediscover where initiation had happened to me. It just in so many different ways than I had imagined it. I often had imagined the silver-haired erotic superstars. But what I got was these random folks that would come into my life and see me clearly and then like give me something precious or speak gifts into my life. And I would watch that evolve and manifest. When I was younger, like my mother and I had a strained mother and child relationship, but our spiritual relationship was really strong and solid and in sync, along with other contemporaries of her time in that particular church environment that were what I call the fringe folk, right? And they were elder women who were really would stand in their power and received a whole bunch of shit for it. But they were my counsels and my mother's counsel. And so those were initiatory processes. A night of prayer that my mom and I had in my basement, like, and the way that the air was charged with electricity, those were initiations. So I needed to learn that in my becoming, in the place where I was becoming, I realized that certain experiences were life altering or redefining. And I discovered that what I thought was common or unassuming was actually the ancestors and spirit holding me down. Listen, I got stories for days. It just didn't look like how I imagined. And honestly, it shouldn't, right? And not in that shouldn't, like, whatever, but in that I am my own generation and I have a different context. And my unique medicine blended with the medicine of my family creates again another erotic signature that's unique to me that I'm meant to contribute in my lineage and in our collective community. And I had to allow myself and give myself the gift of like recognizing that and releasing my mother and my grandmother and my great-grandmother and all of them from their very reckless lack of passing on a story. I say that in jest because their lives were different than our modern existence. So it just becomes important to trust that in your life there has been initiatory moments that are tangible, but you must seek them out because they often are unassuming, and they're unassuming because I think that for the most part, the people around us wouldn't be able to hold that container. And it has come around the way it did for our own benefit and our own healing. So next we're moving into energetic cords and discharging. Let me tell you something, baby. I saw this, how this all like played out, right? One of the reasons I started this teaching the way I did is because of this particular part. You know, acknowledging that stories create pathways that strengthen over time, creating cords that become built up strongholds is really important. Whether or not we have been handed the next up ritual, we must decide for ourselves who we will be in this. And this piece of the process only came clear to me after that, no matter what I get, that no matter what, I get to choose what will be told from myself onward, right? And so really looking at this idea of, you know, how in similar way, how calcium can build up inside of our arteries, right? In a similar way, the story over time becomes a pathway. And then what tends to shape in our minds is that this is the path and it's either I'm missing it or I'm in it, right? This very just strange, like when we don't ask the other pieces that we've asked up to this point in this teaching, where we're looking at the stories, we're looking at you in the stories, them in the stories, we're looking at the patterns, we're looking at the distortions. When we do that, that's us clearing the space. We're clearing out the things that have built up so that it doesn't move on from one generation to the next. It's going to become really important because in this way, you're not carrying around what would be considered baggage. You're actually able to choose what you're going to put into your luggage, right? So you're no longer taking on the essence of anything else, but you receive the fact of you embody an essence in and of yourself. Again, your unique erotic signature. And that is what you need to bring into the space, into our collective world, right? So when we're looking at kind of all the stories and the path that it's created, it's important to clear some of that out so that we're able to really discharge that old energy, right? And when we discharge that old energy and are in choice about what we're going to move forward with when this ascension begins to happen, right? And we're looking at the energetic cords that tie us to all these stories and narratives in our families. Once we start choosing how we're going to move with that, then it changes. Because what happens is that when the transitions happen, there is a surge. And the surge, I don't know if you've ever experienced that in your body, but it is like you are all lit up. And what tends to happen in the way I imagine it and kind of trying to create a model for it is like when something comes onto the mainframe that's new, it's new information is coming on, a new embodiment, a different anchor is coming online for you. And because all those things are happening, it surges in your body, but how that shows up looks different for everybody, right? And so when the surge happens or the moment happens and the shift happens and we're wanting to create something similar to what pre-existed, that becomes challenging because it is not your unique erotic signature. You're replicating something. And what was meant to happen is that you would be able to discharge the energy, delineate the story, and rise in your time and generation and your context. And this is what is so important, because there's also the piece of being able to discharge the energy of what wasn't present for you or what it means to have this shift? Does it mean that I am motherless in the world? And because I subscribe to a cosmology that it has so many dimensions, I'm also subscribing to the idea that I'm never motherless, right? Motherless. As that is important to me and shows up for me, I have access to my mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother. They are in another dimension, but I still have access. I will never be motherless. But at the initial hit of all of this, it felt like that. And when I buried my grandmother, that's been really hard. And it's been really hard because my grandmother's apartment is where we always went. It's been in my life for 40 something years. I'm 44. It was the only place that I knew as home that was the one constant over the years. What do I do with that? What do I do with not having a place to go back to? And sometimes it doesn't even matter if it's like, you know it's there and you know you can always go. And there's a safety and security in that thought that is anchoring. And now that has been eliminated in my kind of like story, right? And with that, along reminding me of all the ways that before this moment, before these moments in my life, or before I became an adult and had my child and created my own life, I didn't have a stable home in that way because we moved around a lot and it felt like we were constantly changing space and energy, and lacking our family, which was this really small old lady in Brooklyn and my uncles. So, and that's what I knew of family. I didn't have, while the family's large, it's not how we experienced family. Our experience of family was really traumatic and tragic. And yeah. And so I'm like, because I'm the oldest, I'm the one with most of the stories about cousins and things like that. My younger siblings and my sister after me, their stories are different. And some don't even have. So being able to recontextualize the shift for me became really important so that I can honor what I'm here to bring and not entirely lean on the way that particular story may offer me a connection to my mother, my grandmother, that's irreplaceable. I don't need that story to have a connection with them. I have had and have a connection with them no matter what. Sans the story, right? Sans the story. So the clearing that we did earlier on was to begin to create the space so that when this transformation is happening or when we create the space to witness it, which it's never too late, right? To witness all these shifts, we can create our own ceremonies, invite our beloved ones, our family, etc., however that may want to look. We can always honor it in that way. So that when we're stepping into the piece where the transference is happening, because it does, there's a transference and an access that previously wasn't as palpable in you and or available. And so if your lineage is witchy and priestessy, this is a baton passing moment. Like literally the energetic charge moves through your lineage and through your generations. You'll have a different type of knowing, and what you know anchors differently. And so there's less questions about yourself in that way. Or you reacting to a byproduct of things, but that you begin to really know yourself and also your bullshit. Like you're like, oh, wait a minute. That's actually my bullshit showing up. And or you're like, nope, this is me. Take it or leave it. Do what you want. But this is where I am GPS'd, right? And it just shifts. It's beautiful, powerful, and can also be unnerving if you're not aware of it, if you don't know what's happening, right? Your energy feels different and can tend to oscillate between deep appreciation and rage. Dreams can show up, intuition shifts, and is much more palpable. Like something in a big way just really shifts. And I think if you come from really magical lineage and ancestry, then it's even more evident in your medicine and the way you move. Access to other gifts become possible, and also other lifetimes, if your cosmology can hold for that, that becomes accessible as well. Another part is watching and minding unconscious channeling. This cracks me up because I see it in a lot in some of my siblings, which is finding oneself doing things or continuing ways of those before us. And that's why we do clearing work, right? So it's like, do you start putting on your mom's clothes in some strange way, right? Although they're like from the 70s. And you know what? Like, do you start speaking exactly like her, like your grandmother, or et cetera? And there's some ways that I do that, jokingly and things like that. And at the same time, but I'm also extremely cognizant and conscious of like looking at making sure I'm tending and bringing attention to the ways that I am different and that my difference is beautiful. And in addition to this, you know, buffet of gifts and skills. But there's also this way that you can start channeling like the way they used to decorate, or your, like, those lines in an energetic sense start crossing in such a way that you start doing things based on what you perceive as, you know, oh, this is the way my mom did things, or this is the way my grandmother did things. And so you want to watch for that, because sometimes when there isn't a healthy, like, and healthy, I mean by it's generative, it's sustainable. Let's use that generative, right? It's when you have a generative relationship, a lot of these loops self-close. So you don't need to hijack a thing in order to have the connection, right? You can still connect. When there's trauma and challenge, that becomes challenging. So you look for other ways to do that, right? And so we want to be mindful what's an expression of honor, which is, this to me is, this is where your ancestor altar comes in, where creating an altar space comes in, is because you can honor that without having to replicate the life that came through that or about that, in order to feel connected. And the truth is that this is your time. You have work to do here, and pieces of the collective community that your unique erotic signature is meant to offer up, that has to do with your context, your lineage, all of it, that impacts our collective community as well, right? So, like, you, there's things that you came here to do as well, and ways that you will bring to the table that are different. And we need that. And no one can replicate you, and no one can replicate your contribution. Not even your mama. So it's like you have to move into the space of taking responsibility for this amazing, take responsibility for your relationship to this amazing transference and shift. Because you do have a choice in it. You get to decide what that means or doesn't mean, or what it looks like for you. And then there's ways when it's involved with trauma and complicated by trauma that you may not have a choice, and you're just working and processing through the way that shit has shown up. And that's part of the process as well for those of us who have really traumatic stories, right? So the next thing that kind of came up, I come from a family of eight, as I said. I almost said nine again. That's my sister's fault. She had a dream that my mother had nine children, so I keep on saying nine now. Good Lord. Okay, back to the story. So this does become a question with a family of eight, and the first seven children are females, and one son in that, you know, model, in that binary. And what happens here is that the question then becomes, who's next in line and or selected, right? For me, this I'm the oldest of eight, so this gem was fascinating to think of and witness. Unlike distorted patriarchal ideas, I don't view it as a linear experience. And what I mean by that is, though I am the oldest, I don't see that as I am next to be enthroned. But there is an acknowledgement that where we are similar, what we are similar to is a council, right? So it's almost like every voice, it's not almost like, every voice counts and brings wisdom, even my little brother. And this is recognizing that each one of us holds like that unique alchemy of things that are family gifts and skills, and then our personal gifts and skills, and then collectively, you know, we show up together to offer that up. Each of us is holding a piece of what has dispersed, right, among many. So nobody needs to be in a hierarchical type of container in this, because we're all holding pieces. And so whether many children, a little bit of children, whatever the case may be, then you right size that for yourself, right? Recognizing that we don't need, like, it doesn't need to be selected, and there doesn't need to be a next in line. And also recognizing that we are able to understand that it will take all of us, and learning and growing is the work of all and not just some, right? Is there benefit to being someone who has been here in terms of time and experience longer? Only if that's turned into wisdom, right? Time plus experience equals action. So if I've done nothing with what I know, who gives a flying fuck how long I've been here? Right? And that's just me. I'm like, look, and I'm the, you know, and I function like that. Like, I'm not a respecter of persons per se. I honor elders when they embody their experience in action and they live it out. And if you're a bullshitter, you're a bullshitter. And it would be so costly to defer to someone who has not applied or is doing that work of integrating, right? Not applied and like you're all done, but you know what I mean? Like in the process of it and owning the process. And so I don't think that next in line or selected, that language really encapsulates something bigger that's missing. And that's the idea of being chosen, right? But being like honored, being witnessed as an individual. And I think that those wires often get conflated and can become terribly painful for some people, because we can spend our entire lives wanting to be part of something, because we feel that unless we are part of something, we are disconnected from everything. And there's ways that that can make like sense, and then there's ways that it's a harmful thought, right? Because it's defining us by the connections that we think we need to have, versus looking at how our connections are a part of us, not the whole. And that there's a part of us that is this unique erotic signature, right? This expression. And that both of those matter in the ways that they move. So that's what really becomes important to me. In this particular season, it's also really important to take the time to notice energy, feelings, and capacity. It will become really important in this process to be in noticing and observation, along with beginning to look at your life up to this moment and how do you want to intentionally live it out the rest of your time. It looks different from this place, and some things seem trivial to stay with anymore, right? Like, again, you just came smack dab into the face of mortality. You're not gonna live forever in that way, right? In your physical form. And so it changes. And shit that you gave a shit about, some of it becomes trivial. And you're like, you know what? It's okay to let that go. Bye. I give you away, and I receive, you know, whatever is it that you're actually really needing. So the inquiry in this particular piece is, what have you been building and living into so far? And be as honest as you can about that. What do you want to change? Is there anything that needs attention? Is there anything that is looking for a notice and a space in your life to be acknowledged? you know, whether it's grief, joy, celebration. It's really fascinating the way, you know, I'm really cautious about this because we already struggle in a society that's constantly sending messages out of, you know, not being enough and always needing to alter and change something. This is not the change I'm talking about. The other day, a couple of days back, a couple of days, maybe a little bit longer, I sat on my kitchen, not on my kitchen table, at my kitchen table, bawling in tears with a friend over the phone, telling her, I do not want to die like my mother and my grandmother. And what I meant by that is that I didn't want to die in a prison of my own making. In a world where there's so much pain, to feel safe, to feel secure, I would live a certain way. I would do a certain thing to make sure that I don't ever have to face those fears. And so I create a prison for myself. My grandmother did that in a way, and my mother did that in a way. And it was painful to put two human beings into the ground, so to speak, who had not lived fully expressed, who fear and shame and false guilt and societal bullshit was pressured onto them in such a way that it contorted who they were, you know? And I think it's important to be able to ask yourself at a conjunction like this, at a juncture where, you know, these two places are meeting in your life, and ask yourself if there's anything that you do want to change. Are you being fully yourself? Is there a place you're contracting? Because this shift offers an opportunity to really begin to say to yourself, my time is precious. I want to live it as full the fuck out as I possibly can. The last question is, what story, what expression of your mark on the matriarchal line do you want to leave? And what I want you to look at this, how I want you to look at this is to look at not only like the story that you were told and things like that, but look at the story that is in all its realness and rawness, your life, and the temptation to idealize things because the ideal sounds much more romantic. I'll give you that. And I'll give you that equally, the fact that you are still here, powerfully being in all your complexity, is magical and romantic as all get out. It is a damn miracle. That's what you are, an erotic miracle. So being able to ask these questions and to step in to this place of separating and unbinding your story from the shadow and the pain, and looking at the way you can honor that and begin to generate a different quality in your context for as long as that is. And when you, before you leave to the next dimension, you're able to be much more conscious about creating ritual for your beloved ones. And maybe in that ritual, there is no distinction between a binary or things like that. And there's just this really pure understanding about energies and archetypes and all those beautiful things. And you're able to speak the blessing into the lives of your loved ones, and that they can take and embody the magic and the medicine of your family for their generation powerfully and beautifully. Because we need you, we need your community, we need your family to bring your medicine. We need all the medicine, both ancient medicine, present medicine, and future medicine. And we are moving into a space where they're colliding together to shift and create a world that we can live in. and maybe not our generation, maybe the generation after or the generation after that, whenever it's happening, I know that my peoples will have risen up and contributed in their most exquisite form to this beautiful tapestry and this beautiful weaving that we're doing at a macro magnum opus level shit. So, in closing, take the time to step into awareness and step into the awareness of all the ways stories live in you and around you, because it's important. Practicing trust that we are where we need to be is also an everyday choice. Grief is powerful medicine, and it has the capacity to have a full cycle of processing. The medicine birthed out of grief and mourning, dreaming and discovering and beingness is remarkable and sacred. So be sure to be gentle with yourself. You are rising yet again. I hope that this teaching has been nourishing and powerful for you. I pray now that we are closing and ending this particular piece of this as it continues to move in your life and integrate as you continue to step into your fullness and all the ways you want to redefine or define it. I'm grateful for our opportunity to do this, to speak to this, to be together in this. I'm grateful for the support systems that held us in this container and portal and will continue to hold you as you move through it. Thank you so much for being here. With absolute devotion and love, your comadre. Now, if you need me, you know where to find me at my website, angeliqueguides.net. And if you need to email me, leadershipthatheals@gmail.com. Thank you so much. Mucho amor y mucho beso. Adios.